Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 583, Science Faction, Overconfidence and the Link to Conspiracy Theories.
This seems like a no shit. Like, I mean, all of us, everybody listening to this podcast has a friend that they went to high school with, or at least somebody they know that went to high school with who's really dumb, and they get to see their social media posts and how confident they are in those social media posts.
Yes, very Dunning-Kruger. As I've said before, and I still think this is incredibly accurate, everybody talks shit about bullies, but every conspiracy theorist you've ever met is just a dumb person who wasn't bullied enough to know that they're dumb.
That's true. I've worked a lot of shitty jobs with some really dumb guys, and every once in a while you'll meet a guy who knows he's dumb and he's not self-conscious, like, hey, listen, I know I'm dumb. If he says something and it's
he doesn't
wrong,
bother people about it.
He's not gonna fight you on it. He's like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I like. It's like the old timer in the wheelchair, right? He's not pretending he's going to beat you in a game of one-on-one. He's happy to tell you why he's going to lose, but he might have some life tips he can give you along the way. He knows his lane. It's the one without stairs in it.
I really think a lot of this could be solved if, you know, you just were forced to hang around people smarter than you. Like, it would be very difficult for me to be that Dunning-Kruger guy when I'm on this podcast that regularly features scientists and people much smarter than me.
Yeah, Dr. Troy really puts us in our place.
He puts you in your place. I wasn't referring to Dr. Troy.
Sorry, I forgot. I forgot you and Dr. Troy are on par.
We both were competing for that Caltech scholarship.
If only you'd eaten two more hot dogs, Damien, then you could have gotten it.
Dude, you say what you want, man. I went in overconfident. Dr. Troy went in there. He was efficient. He was dipping the hot dogs in water.
Oh, dear. And speaking of dipping the hot dogs in water, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing great. And I think that's really cool. Like, you know, Caltech has the famous hot dog eating contest to get in. MIT has the wet t-shirt contest.
Uh-huh. You have to have a concave chest.
Breasts are too big. You're way too fuckable. Get on out of here.
I was talking about the dudes. Like, their chest has to go inside. Like, if you wanted to do heart surgery, it would only take, like, a half-inch cut.
I feel like there's two ways you go that way, or like the Steve Wozniak guy where, like, you know, like, they actually are judging the size of your tits. Like, there we go. That's what I'm talking about. You're in.
Damien, you know what's funny is it's a little like peek behind the scenes right now. I'm not in San Diego. I'm in the middle of the California desert on a gigantic military base.
Then who am I recording in the studio with right now?
Doing some archaeology, and I got forwarded an article from my parents, actually, like right before I came out, and they're like, isn't this where you're going? And it was a article. It was a thing that happened, by the way, like a week after I was here last time. It was a thing that happened where I'm, again, like military base, very, very large, huge, gigantic military base in the middle of the desert in California, and has a bunch of like pilots and airfields and stuff like that. And I guess like a week or two ago, a dude dressed up as a ninja showed up with some like special forces helicopter pilots who were they just like appeared at 1 o'clock in the morning outside of their hangar and was like, do you know where my family is? Like, no, I mean, unless I'm your family, then no. But no, no. And then he's like, ugh. And he pulled a sword out and attacked the guy. And he was dressed head to toe in ninja garb. And that guy, like, ran around a building, got inside. Him and, like, 28 other guys who are all military had to lock themselves inside, like, a Quonset hut as this guy ran around with a sword threatening to kill them. They couldn't do anything because they didn't have any live ammo. So they, like, had to call, the local sheriff who caught the guy walking down the side of the street, you know, like 5 miles away and almost shot him. And I realize that my garb, when I'm out here, like, I have, like, a ninja cowl. I have a legitimate, like, at some point, maybe I'll even put a picture of myself in it on our website. But I have, like, a
we won't be able to tell who it is.
You won't. I have a full-on ninja covering, face covering, and I walk around outside with it. And I realize now I'm very likely to get shot.
Oh, yeah, you can't do that anymore, Bobby. That guy ruined it for you.
It's ninja appropriation.
Yeah, but to be fair, you took his family. So this is kind of the least.
Even.
No, odds are, I mean, how much do you want to bet that, like, this lady was like, well, my husband clearly is a self-taught martial artist. He's also clearly insane. So that means it's going to be really easy to trick him with this Dear John letter. Oh, my God. The government took my wife and signed the letter in my wife's handwriting.
See, I always just pictured that there was a lot of dudes who saw Taken and thought, like, oh, I could be that guy. I could be the guy who, like, makes that phone call. And in reality, you are right. His wife just left him for a sailor who happened to be on the base. And he thought he was being Liam Neeson in the, like, I'm going to track you down and find you. He put on his ninja gear, put on his outfit, got his katana out, and just decided to break into a highly secured... By the way, I have to go through, like, 3 ID checkpoints just to get to work in the morning. I don't know how the fuck he got in there, but get into a highly secured military base and attack a squadron of helicopter pilots at 1 in the morning.
This guy's like Dale Gribble if he had some stones, you know?
Yeah.
I'm surprised nobody got pocket sanded.
Anyway, if you guys don't hear from me after this, it was probably ninja related, so that'll explain it.
You know, you're lucky if the cops find you when you're wearing that cowl. God forbid this ninja finds you roaming his turf.
Yeah, that's right. What if it's really more of a ninja on ninja crime?
So, they sent you after me.
Well. Or, I'm walking in the desert, I got the cowl on, all of a sudden, you know, I'm just doing my job, looking at the ground, all of a sudden I look up, there's another guy with a ninja cowl in front of me, he's got the sword, he's looking right at me, he just appeared out of nowhere in the middle of the desert. I look up at him, immediately I'm worried, and then I go, all right, I took your fucking family.
You know, we're all laughing, we're all joking, but this guy's going to be Epstein'd in his cell. The government needs to keep him quiet because they have his family.
All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Okay, article number one. Damien, I love this one so much. I did something rare, another little peek behind the scenes most people don't know. I rarely ask Damien to actually read the articles. I send it to him ahead of time. I send him the show notes usually like a day ahead of time, but I rarely go, you need to read this. This was one of, I don't know, 24 in the entire career that we have done this show that I said, Damien, you need to read this one first. And I fucking love this article. It's amazing. It's a Scientific American article. You can go check it out.
I just read the title, then jumped to conclusions. About everything else. So, I mean, I don't.
So, the article title is People Who Jump to Conclusions Show Other Kinds of Thinking Errors. And the subtitle is Belief in Conspiracy Theories and Overconfidence Are Two Tendencies Linked to Hasty Thinking.
I like how I was reading this article, and one of the best parts about this was like, how do we test for this? How do we test for conspiratorial thinking? And they had to find a test that they give to schizophrenic people.
Well, no, that was to help them work with their jumping to conclusions. But yes, we will get there.
They got to get the mat from Office Space.
So this is a super interesting article to me for a lot of points, which I think I'm going to be able to convey to you. But I think it's very interesting in general. And it's got elements of science education. It's got elements of psychology. But it also has elements of a stand-up joke I've been working on. So I'm at it from all 3 angles at this point.
You know, like, Bobby, if you were one of the scientists running this test... I have to imagine you would be confronted with a level of stupidity in some of these answers that you previously thought impossible. And you went to public school.
Well, let's get into what the test actually was, because nobody listening actually knows about it yet. So this piece looks at the tendency of people with particular mindsets to jump to conclusions quickly with little information. So let's look at how the research design is set up. What they did is they had a game, basically, in which players...
were locked in a saw room.
No, this is just like a simple way to kind of gauge where you are at in terms of how much you understand stats and how you might jump to conclusions and whatnot. So the idea is that you are informed that there are 2 different lakes. In one of them, most of the fish are red. In one of them, most of the fish were gray. And you're walking by the bank of one of the lakes and you don't know which one, and you see someone fishing. And that person is pulling out one fish at a time. How many fish do you get to before you go, that's the gray lake or that's the red lake? And that's just like a really easy sorting hat, so to speak, that decides whether you're going to slither in or jump to conclusions.
Whoa, okay. First off, I read this test and I was like, you know, I'm putting myself in this situation. First off, am I just going to sit? What is the rate that this guy's catching fish? Do I have all day just to sit here and watch this guy catch fish? Because if it takes him an hour, yeah, I'm just going to wait for one fucking fish and call it. Listen, armed with the knowledge I have.
I mean, this is a hypothetical situation, so you're not actually waiting by the lake. You just have to state how many fish you need to see before you are confident.
I actually think in real time. So I'm putting myself in this fisherman situation. But I mean, even so, you know, like if this guy's just pulling them out one by one, yeah, I'd be an asshole to not wait like for 10 fish.
Yeah, like something like 10 would be a great example. I mean, you get a good enough sample size that, you know, if it's you know, 9 gray and 1 red, you should know. But, you know, oftentimes people who jump to conclusions will just see 1 or 2, which, as we all know, look, if you're going to pull out 10 fish and there's a 10% chance, you know, you're going to get the opposite color, then, you know, you pull out that one, there's a 10% chance that's the wrong one. So you wouldn't just wait for 1 or 2. You would want to see quite a few.
What are the stakes of this? Like, is the government going to kill my family if I get this wrong? So it'd behoove me to wait for a large enough sample group?
No, it's really more being ostracized in certain fish communities.
Oh, man. Okay. Gotcha. I'll wait. But if I'm from a landlocked state, though, I probably...
What they realized is they could correlate the results of that to other things. They found that the fewer fish a player needed to see, the more errors that particular individual made in other reasoning activities. And also they found the quicker the jump to conclusions, the more likely someone is to believe in conspiracy theories and medical myths. So what they're saying is, when we see this jumping to conclusions, it's something that is part of an overall suite of poor decision-making, bad cognitive processes. Now, as far as jumping to conclusions right away, we see that in certain like pathological conditions. Schizophrenics tend to jump to conclusions very, very quickly with very little evidence. Hence why, you know, you're looking at somebody from across the street and he's like, that guy's a spy. He's been looking at me for years, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, they'd use the term globalist, that's probably. True. And the guy would be like a Hasidic Jew or something. And it's...
They performed worse on cognitive tests that required careful thought. They were more likely to place bad bets in gambling scenarios. Even when they were informed ahead of time of the right odds and could keep track of them, they were just impulsively more likely to make poor bets. They were definitely ranked as way overconfident. And they ranked the chances that they had scored well on a test of American civics much higher than the general population, even on specific answers that they had gotten wrong. They were much more confident that they were right than the general population, most of which who got those questions right. So again, you see a huge boost of overconfidence.
We call that the Fox News message board fallacy.
The researchers were analyzing this in terms of system one versus system two thinking. So system one is autonomic thoughts, basically stuff that comes to you without any work. It is just your brain doing its processing by itself. And system two is thoughtful thoughts, thoughtful processes that you have to go through and oftentimes consider varying points of view and weigh things one side or the other. They found that jumpers and non-jumpers are actually equally swayed by automatic system one thoughts. They are both subject to those. The difference is the jumpers, those who jump to conclusions very quickly, they do not engage in as much of that controlled system to reasoning as the non-jumpers do. Meaning everybody is getting system one information. Quick, this is your immediate blah, 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 your immediate thought to this, your immediate reaction. It's not like those reactions aren't present in the non-jumpers. What is present is more system two thought that reflectively then looks at those, analyzes it with the knowledge of the world in a given situation, and then processes it to make the final decision. That seems to be missing in a lot of these jumpers.
What if, and just hear me out, Bobby, what if a lot of these people that are being mislabeled as non-critical thinkers, non-second stage thinkers, what if they were actually avid test takers, avid standardized test takers, and they know mm-hmm. that you should always go with your first guess? Don't mind fuck yourself.
Not true, but okay, fair enough.
Okay, so that's it. That's it. Fair enough.
Did somebody teach you how to do that on a test once? Because that's absolutely not how you should do a test. You should consider each question carefully.
No, you just rate it really fast and just mark B, regardless of the answer. You write out 420 on the Scantron.
Well, I was reading this and I was like reading along like pumping my fist in the air like I was the bad boy at the end of the Breakfast Club. I was like, hell yeah, like as I was reading this thing. And I'll tell you, I don't want to give it away.
You'd be Judd Nelson.
I think I could be Judd Nelson. Yeah. So like, here's what I've been thinking of, and it's something I've been thinking of basically through COVID. This is an idea that has come to me that I've been working on as a stand-up bit, but it's also true, hence as it is reflected in this particular paper, which is a lot of the things that we call crazy, when we go, that person's crazy, in our head, we think that means like they have crazy thoughts or their brain doesn't work right. But that can't be it, because like, everybody has crazy thoughts and everybody's brain doesn't work right at sometimes, but we don't reflect that mistake in our actions, right? What we call as a crazy person is somebody who has those distorted thoughts, but also has way too high a self-esteem. Because like, if I was schizophrenic, here's the deal. I think I see a dragon outside my window. I yell and say, hey, look, everybody, there's a fucking dragon. Eventually I get hauled off to the hospital. They explain I have schizophrenia. They explain there are no more dragons. I go, all right. The next time I look outside the window and I see a dragon, I just fuck off. Like, I don't care. I'm not going to talk about it to anybody because I know it's not real. But it takes some goddamn unearned self-esteem to think there's a dragon every single time after you've been told every single previous time that it was just a figment of your imagination.
No, that dragon's real. Anything else is just a liberal hoax. Well, I mean, like, it is very easy to just say their brain is broken. And for that reason, because...
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. Everybody thinks the problem is they have crazy thoughts. And I'm like, no. Everybody has crazy thoughts. It's crazy thoughts plus the self-esteem to go with them. That's what makes a crazy person.
Bobby, you say that, but like, I feel pretty good about my on the crazy thought meter. Like, I feel like I wasn't bitten by a crazy zombie, and I'm not hiding anything. Like, I'll show you my body.
Oh no!
You on the other hand, Mr. Bomb Maker, Mr. Nutbag, but controlled nutbag.
Yes, of course. I have crazy thoughts all the time. Every once in a while, I'm like, oh man, like how many chihuahuas would it take to pull a carriage? Like, if I just got like a whole bunch of chihuahuas, could I have them pull me around the park? Could I be like the master? Like, is there a law that's against that? Would somebody come after me with it? What's the actual physics involved?
Bobby knows that he has crazy thoughts.
Yes.
I'm not telling stories out of school. I'm not saying any, I'm not revealing anything about Bobby, but on traps alone, just yes. On the folder of his brain, the computer folder labeled traps. By the way, it's actually three files deep and it's actually titled something else.
Yeah. It's called like pictures of family.
In that file alone, there is enough crazy.
Hell yeah, I ain't getting incepted. Fuck that.
Bobby, I've actually incepted you to believe that you weren't incepted.
I just think, anyway, I this is one of the reasons that it was very, very interesting to me. And another reason is because I think research like this is incredibly important because these common mistakes cause a ton of problems and they basically keep themselves from being fixed. Like if my mistake is I'm bad at math, then I can always just get better at math. But if my mistake is that I'm bad at math and I also simultaneously cannot know that I'm bad at math, then it's going to be much harder to get good at math because I'm never going to be like, fuck, I'm bad at this. I got to go study.
So is there like a Jaime Escalante of I guess, accepting reality?
Yes. We had to create him. It was a mixture of Carl Sagan and a drill sergeant. We got Arlie Ermey and Carl Sagan. And we mixed them together.
They're both dead. But so which tells me nobody's guarding their cells. So we could clone something.
Are you confusing causation for correlation? You stupid motherfucker.
My husband, Andrew Yan.
God damn it, it's Andrew Yan. Well, and even more so, they took a step towards saying, well, how do we fix this? And one of the things they used, as Damien referenced before, is a treatment called metacognitive training, or MCT. Now, this was developed for schizophrenia and for schizophrenic patients because schizophrenics have a huge problem with basically jumping to conclusions. They're on the furthest side of the spectrum. And so this MCT is a process to kind of teach them not only that they have cognitive biases, but point out those cognitive biases and in a repetitive way, constantly note the mistakes to force people to confront their overconfidence. And it's actually fairly decently received treatment, seems to work quite well in a lot of schizophrenia cases, not for everybody, but it does show some dramatic improvement for some people. So they were trying this on broader groups, including conspiracy theorists and stuff that were in this particular set, and they were able to show improvement. The reason this is really, really important is because otherwise we're looking at something going, look at this huge problem. We have all these people, they're overconfident in their opinion, they jump to conclusions, they don't have the right system to processing, but all we could do is just like say, look, there it is, here is a problem. And that is part of it. You have to point out the problem, but the other part is to be able to say, well, here's what we can do instead. And the second you could direct somebody to something, i.e. some of this MCT training is online. So you could direct them to this and have them slowly chip away at that overconfidence they have while also recognizing cognitive biases and how they affect their way of thinking, and et cetera, et cetera. You might actually make some progress. I mean, you said somewhat facetiously a little while ago, you know, blah, 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 Fox News crowd, but this occurs in partisan things too, left and right. The super, super partisan people are unable to kind of go through these higher level processes when they have that knee-jerk reaction to the person of the opposing party. And therefore, it would be very useful even in things like, you know, uber partisanship in the country.
I agree. Yes, there is partisanship, certainly on both sides. There are people who, when presented with evidence, will still deny reality.
Yes.
But I think, like, depending upon, like, America has this weird thing where, like, if you were born in a rural part of the country, there is just a statistically high chance that you are going to deny much more reality than somebody from the big old city.
If you stay there, there does seem to be some correlation to that, but you also have to
agree. If like you're like gay or a minority or born smart, like, yeah, you're probably going to get the hell out of that town as soon as you fucking can.
Yeah, but this is just super interesting because I see these errors all the time because, you know, I studied science education. I studied cognitive biases, logical fallacies, all of these things. And I constantly look at my own thinking and think, well, okay, how am I getting this one wrong? Clearly, I came to the wrong conclusion here. What is it that I did wrong? Where is this step? What are the biases that are involved? And I have biases just like everybody else. But it does shock me that there are entire swaths of people who have never considered this about themselves. They never consider that their thinking is flawed in some way. They aren't analyzing everything from the full perspective. And what's crazy to me is, you know, in that Dunning-Kruger manner, when you meet these people, they have done so little in that regard that they're willing to believe crazy stuff. This is why conspiracy theorists can believe, you know, contradictory things about 9/11, as long as it's a conspiracy and stuff. They have so little self-criticism when it comes to the functioning and reality of the way their mind works that they're unable to pick up on these mistakes. And the sad thing is it means they're going to keep making it over and over and over again because, again, they never learned they were bad at math enough to go study math for real.
I think that's why amongst comics, quote unquote, I used to think like, you know, comics were just a people, just as a group of people usually think they're much smarter than they are. That's why I know most of the conspiracy theorists and batshit crazy people I know are actually people who are quote unquote comedians. But I think it's what you're saying is it's not that they're comedians because none of those people are actually funny. So
yes.
It's
the same thing that stops them from being funny is the thing that makes them have conspiracy theory beliefs, because you and I have bombed before. Every comedian bombs. Anyone who tells you haven't is fucking lying. You and I have bombed 1,000 times. What happens when you bomb? You eat that shit and you go, man, I got to work on that set. I got to be more prepared. I got to do something better last time. But they hear laughs when there are not laughs up there. And so they never fix their material. And you see them doing the same tired set 10 years later that never got a laugh.
I know people who are, I don't even know what to deal with them because they do the set, they don't get the laugh, they don't acknowledge the laugh, but they make no changes. And then they come back the next night just to experience that kick in the nuts again. And it's not that they think they're good, it's just that, like, they love pain.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. But regardless, I love this stuff because I think we should all have classes in high school about our cognitive biases, about our flaws in reasoning and thinking and how to do this better. Because again, if you get this right, you can figure everything else out. If you figure out the problems in your thinking processes, in the way you learn things, in the natural biases that you have, if you figure that out, you could just set your arrow wherever you want to go and learn whatever you want. But until you figure that out, you will never be successful at learning anything. Because anytime you get something wrong, it will not register and you cannot course correct. You are a bullet that's shot out of a gun, and all you can do is go straight, whereas the rest of us are a car that's able to steer around obstacles because we can see when we're wrong.
I don't understand it. I've been married 4 times because women just must, everybody else, my kids won't talk to me. At what point, because I mean, a lot of these people are nightmares to live with, probably in their personal life, because they're unwilling to grow, not just in the ways logically, but they're unwilling to grow as people. I think a lot of this maybe sorts itself out in the end. We're not living in the 40s where, like, kids are afraid to talk shit about you. No, I think, like, if you have kids, you have a wife that's going to leave you now. She's not financially dependent upon you, asshole, anymore.
All of a sudden, you're going to find yourself with nothing but a samurai sword and a ninja costume in the middle of the California desert.
Full circle. I love it.
And frankly, I also love the idea. I love this because they talked about metacognition training. I, by the way, went up and looked up some metacognition training in preparation for this. There are some stuff you can find available online. I actually went through a few of the exercises myself because, again, I want to know my own cognitive biases and see where I fall on that scale so I can correct that as well. I advise everybody, go explore where it is that you have flaws in your reasoning and thinking and try and be the lawyer for the opposite side as opposed to the lawyer for yourself, which we always do, and try and poke holes in your own arguments.
I'm taking this test now, and it turns out I am highly anti-Semitic. Huh. Okay. Huh. I volunteered at Yad Vashem. I'm allowed to say these things.
And I would point out that, like, you know, if you make this a socially acceptable and reasonable thing for people to constantly be examining their own biases and reflecting on their inability to, you know, go through proper system two thinking and stuff, things can change. You know, I'd remind people that Damien, in your and mine lifetime, the idea of going to a therapist or something was taboo in the 80s and is now, like, now I kind of think, like, anybody who doesn't, like, every once in a while see a therapist, there's something really wrong with that person. Like, it's the opposite of what
it's like sushi.
Yes.
It's become popularized. I think you just need enough older people to die and enough younger people to realize, like, holy shit. Yeah. That old guy sucked. He just drank and hit us.
It's also like sushi in that, like, the more you have it in your life, the more likely at any given time you are to get laid.
Yeah, I've done both. I have taken a date on a first date to sushi and to therapy.
Both were imaginary dates, and the therapist had a lot of questions, as did the waiter.
Okay, I understand. This is an imaginary date, Damien. Why is it your mother? You said I could bring anybody I wanted on the first date. That's what you said.
And by the way, we've also made huge changes to our society when we find out little things. So again, we could find this out and be like, listen, all we have to do is start getting people more into their cognitive biases and stop them from jumping to conclusions, going through more system two processing and find ways like metacognitive training to do that. And that could actually work. I mean, I would also remind people that up into our lifetimes, probably starting in the 70s, was the first case where researchers started going, actually, you know, like, just like spanking kids is actually hurting them. Like, we should really stop hitting kids a lot. And within like 30 years, it went from ubiquitous to like, there's something wrong. Like, in general society, there's something wrong with you if you're striking your kid, right? So like, that we have seen this huge shift, and that shift was dependent on the mental health of, you know, the kids who grew up to be adults. And it has likely changed our society dramatically. I would point out that, you know, the 90s saw the greatest reduction in violent crime in the history of this country. And that might be one of the many things that played into that. And we now live in a world or in a country where it is pretty taboo to beat your children.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people who were against it, because, I mean, a lot of people were fucking beat as kids, and then, like, once the data started coming out saying that, this is actually damaging, like, I knew I was right. Goddamn right. I'm not going to beat my fucking kids. Fuck you, Mom.
Yeah, well, regardless, these changes can be made, and I'm really excited at the possibility that they might be. I think they'd make society much, much better. All right, on to article number two, the oxytocin hypothesis problem.
Yeah, it's a huge problem in the Midwest. I mean, not just anywhere. The thing is, like, people go into the doctor for depression.
That's OxyContin, the painkiller. This would be oxytocin, what it was often called, the love hormone or love.
Yeah, that's
molecule.
But you cut me off. People would go to the doctor for loneliness.
So they get hugs.
They get prescribed performance enhancing hugs.
It's just one guy named Reginald who's really good at hugs. You get a prescription, and then some people get addicted, and so they'll forge other prescriptions, and they'll come to Reginald, and he'll be like, guys, come on.
And then, like, at some point, you're getting, like, hugs on the street. Like, just...
Yes. Yeah. Well, so pretty soon you start going to one of those kind of, like, black market pain clinic hug places, and then, yes, eventually you got to get your hookup on the street.
They're just, hey, man, can I shake your hand for a second? Just... No, get away from me, you chunky.
So we've talked about oxytocin before. This is oftentimes called the love molecule or the love drug. We see it present in displays of affection between mother and child. It's going on in our brain. It's also not all good, by the way. It's also considered part of neural pathways that tend to reflect xenophobia and racism and that kind of stuff. So
Yeah, I love being xenophobic. That's...
Like, I'm like,
close the borders.
I'm like Clint Eastwood's character in Gran Torino. Like, my one true love is racism.
It's what I enjoy. I enjoy mouth tobacco and racism.
That should be your Tinder profile.
Oh my God. I'm just thinking of who I would match with.
So there's been a lot of studies, some of which we have even reported on, that indicate that oxytocin use in both children and adults with ASD, autism spectrum disorder, can actually cause huge results, including swings of some of those symptoms over away from the autistic spectrum, at least in the short term. And there's been lots of studies that go back and forth. We've talked about these before. And a recent study just came out that seems to indicate there is no actual effect. Now, I wanted to bring this up not because this particular article is like out there and totally out there. I wanted to bring this up because we actually see this a lot in this question. When I went back and looked at the research for the oxytocin autism hypothesis, you see that there are studies going both ways. Some that show, yes, we see a result. Some that say, no, we don't. And so this is kind of a hallmark of something that is either not effective or only effective in subpopulations of the bit wider group that you're looking at.
Maybe some people just aren't as good at hugging. Well, you have a very cold Nurse Ratched scientist.
We've seen studies. There's an Australian study that only its end number is like 30, so it's like activation group is like 15. But it's like,
you
out
call
of those
that
30
a hug?
Kids,
that's not a hug.
But out of those 30 kids, which are 3 to 8 years old, they supposedly, you know, saw a bunch of results in the activation group. But again, super small end number, so who knows? And then there was some studies back in 2010 that looked at adults, and some of them seemed to show results from some of the oxytocin therapy. But then there's a bunch of studies that show no results. So this most recent one that just came out also showed no results. So this study was a 6-month-long placebo-controlled study of 3 to 17-year-olds. It had an N size of around 300, split about evenly across activation and control, and they found literally no difference between the two groups. It was a really well-controlled, well-designed study carried out over a long period of time. They had proper dosages on the oxytocin, good controls, et cetera, and this seemed to show absolutely nothing. You know, and this seems to go back and forth in the literature. Some show evidence, some do not. So what is it we are seeing? Is this just a total sham? Is this another one of the many ASD shams we have seen? It's possible. It's totally possible. I have a hypothesis, though, and this is why I wanted to bring this study up. I have said before, and I think this is a prediction that I am very confident in. You know, I would bet my life savings on this. Like, during my lifetime, we will find out that what we call autism spectrum disorder, ASD, is actually a myriad of different disorders that we have lumped together with a myriad of different causes, some overlapping but differential symptoms, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, and this is so evident to me as somebody who, you know, finds himself on that spectrum and has certain qualities of it, but then also knows people who are literally nonverbal, right? And we call these same group, this is autism. It's like, it's probably not. It's probably a bunch of shit. And we've all just given it this one name. So the evidence that they have found when they did more detailed research into the times where they did see an actual difference in the activation group, they found that a lot of those differences came in individuals who already had low blood oxytocin levels, which is, by the way, not the norm for ASD. But those individuals who had low baseline oxytocin levels showed significant improvement. So here's my hypothesis. We're saying autism is this big thing. In fact, it's a whole bunch of little things. And one small subset of what we call autism is groups of people who just have low natural resting oxytocin levels. And boosting those up alleviates the symptoms that we associate with autism spectrum disorder, but that most of the rest of us display, not because they have low blood oxytocin levels, but because they have different genetic variables that do different things to our brains. And so we are a different category. And so what we are seeing in some of those studies show some kind of effect. And that effect is because some subset of people with quote unquote autism have a specified condition that is characterized by low blood oxytocin levels, and those go up and then that changes. But for the vast majority of people with ASD, it's not going to do anything. And so I personally, that is my own hypothesis. Whether or not that one is true, I am almost certain it is true that ASD is actually a collection of many, many different things that we have all kind of put under one tent. And I think that as time goes on, we, especially with genetic tests, will be able to kind of tease out the different conditions that make up ASD. And eventually, we might be able to find other little fixes, cures, treatments like this. You know, if you are this, you know, type 47, what we used to call autism, it helps to get oxytocin. If you are this person, it helps to have this type of cognitive behavioral therapy, et cetera, et cetera. It's one of the many reasons that I am ardently against, as we talked about on previous episodes, those groups that say, no, you shouldn't do genetic tests to figure out the basis of autism. I'm afraid of X, Y, and Z. No, no, no. Do those things because I want to segment this up and I want to try and treat these people as easily as possible, myself included. And the best way to do that is to understand the underlying causes of what's going on. I think we are seeing kind of the science, the literature play out of a condition that is too broad. And because of that too broad characteristic of that condition, our attempts to search for treatments are being hampered because they are working in some subsets and not working in others. And until we tease out all those details, it's going to be very hard to start coming up with effective treatments and cures.
I think you're stealing Spectrum, Bobby, for being honest. I think that sometimes you like the attention. That like I've seen you walk into dressed poorly,
yes.
Walked into public places, not made eye contact,
yep.
And started awkward conversations with
yes.
Security personnel, ignoring social cues.
Yep, that's just to get off. That's just my thing.
Really, really, where were you diagnosed, bro? Where were you diagnosed?
Yeah, I'm not autistic. I'm just socially awkward, sexual.
Oh, your wife could start her own podcast.
Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science of Action 583, where you learned all about how people who jump to conclusions show other kinds of thinking errors as well, and how oxytocin isn't the miracle cure for ASD. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science of Action 584.
Come on, Reginald. I'm hurting bad. I'll suck your dick for a hug, man.
You've been listening to Science Function. Wait, that's not right.